What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/newbook and get your copy today.
Joey, we get a great opportunity to have a third conversation with Tal Simpson today.
A three-peat.
And I think it's just a really interesting opportunity to hear from someone who has implemented the 3 steps in their life, what they really wanted, the clarity,
yep,
how to take control, getting their cash in a place that they could access, and then really picking the course and setting the direction for how they were going to create income streams to the point where he was able to leave his job. And if you've ever wondered what it's like for someone to actually implement all 3 steps, today, our guest comes back for the third time and is continuing to inspire us.
Yeah, I think you guys have made it very clear to us that you love to hear not from the guy that is, you know, out of this atmosphere, has created millions and millions of dollars, but the guy that is just like you, that has taken the steps that Russ mentioned. And here's the thing that I felt like you left out about Tal is he has invested in himself, which we always talk about with that hierarchy of wealth is, man, the very first place you should be investing in is in yourself. And the amount of knowledge that Tal has received over the years in a very short amount of time from taking action and surrounding himself with great people, which, by the way, he shares in this episode how that has now catapulted him to the next level. I mean, there you need to be writing notes on today's episode. Like, this guy is full of wisdom that you can implement for yourself.
It's just one of those really cool success stories that we're super excited to share with you, just to help you see the progression and journey of another member here in the Wealth Without Wall Street community, taking actions, going through those 3 steps, and not being afraid to, like you said, Joey, invest in themselves. I hope you'll invest in yourself. And if you have questions and you want to get on the call with one of our coaches and say, hey, how do I implement this concept of infinite banking? I want to be like Tao. I want to be able to leverage my life insurance policies to invest in myself, to be able to create passive income streams. And you're not quite sure exactly how that works. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/free call. Take action. We can do this and we can help you. Now let's get into the interview with Tao Simpson.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
This is going to be one of my favorite interviews for multiple reasons. One, we have a return guest. Two, we have what I believe is a real life Monopoly game happening. And one of my favorite things that happens in reality TV shows is when they do an update. Mm. So welcome into the show, Tal Simpson. Great to have you back, man.
Thanks for having me back.
I mean, this is number 3, right? I don't think we've had anybody on 3 times.
Well, you know, you picked a good guy to bring back for the third time.
Yeah. People are just asking for more Tao.
I don't believe that.
All right. So now we're sitting here over lunch today earlier, and you are, as Russ said, living the Monopoly dream. You're passing out these green houses. You're trading them in for the red hotel. Tell us a little bit about what the last year, it's been over a year now. Yeah. What's happened over the last year?
Yeah, because the last time, I'll bring everybody up to speed. If you haven't listened to Tao's previous episodes, Tao was a lawyer who started doing real estate on the side, ultimately caught the passive income bug and the real estate game bug and decided to leave his day job and do this full time. what was that, October 2019?
Yep, yep.
And the last discussion we had, you had just acquired a handful of more units and were up to 60 single family houses at the time.
Yep.
All right. So take us, what's happened over the last 12 months, 14 months since then?
Well, since I left the job, I needed to find something. You can't just make money buying rental houses. So I really, kind of my day job, if you will, is more or less wholesaling, flipping houses, finding off-market deals, and flipping them to investor or buying them and reselling for profit.
Which, by the way, so, but when, how you built your rental portfolio was basically wholesaling to yourself, yeah, right?
Some of it. I mean, when we started buying, I just bought off the MLS and, you know, I've been kind of a numbers guy, so I could tell what was a good deal rental wise. And we just, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing. I just kind of followed, you know, like, oh, this seems, you know, study as much as you can, and this seems like a good deal. And we were just buying off the MLS. As I got into it, I very much started identifying as like a real estate guy. And so I sort of taught myself how to wholesale and started sending off postcards and getting directly to seller. And so then, yes, I was kind of wholesaling myself for a while. There have been a few groups of rental houses I bought from another investor that already had them fixed up and occupied. And I've sold them some houses. They've sold me some houses. So there's kind of a different story for how we got to the 60. But
a little incestuous to a certain degree. I mean, not to put words in your mouth.
But you just did. No, but that's real estate for you.
Well, so, I mean, you were a corporate attorney for a long, long time. And then all of a sudden you started learning this off to the side.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think there's a lot of people that are listening to this right now that are trying to figure out how to get out of their day job because they just really don't like it. They're interested in real estate. But some may have that question mark. It's just too hard. It's too hard to learn all of these things. I'm going to be competing with people who've been doing it for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, because now you have made that decision to move into it full time. Like, how much competition is there? Do you feel like you're still the low man on the totem pole, or how do you feel like you've made strides in your own real estate knowledge over the last 12 months doing this solo?
I mean, it's definitely a learn by doing. I mean, when we started buying them 3 or 4 years ago, you know, I would probably not buy those same houses today, but it worked out fine. But I mean, it's just a learn by doing thing, just like any other trade. I got some things going for me, and Birmingham is a very good real estate investor market. So that helped. Just the numbers are good. So it gives you a little bit of buffer as far as like, well, I bought 10 houses and two of them were not that great, but the others were good. And overall, it, you know, if you get up to 60 houses, you can have a couple dogs in there and it's fine. So that's another thing is, you know, scaling definitely mitigates your risk some. And, you know, just every deal that I did, I learned something. And you know, being around people who, like these guys that I'm working with, have 600 houses. And so they really know what they're doing. And so, you know, getting around people who are ahead of you, and, you know, just like anything else, it's just like if you're a first year lawyer and you find a partner at the law firm who's, you know, an expert in your area of interest and getting under his or her wing, it's the same thing as anything else. But
so I have two questions in light of the last year. One, when we interviewed you last time, you had just put in your notice.
Yeah.
It was a scary time. Like, but how
more scary for my wife.
But at the same time, you had some confidence in the fact that you had built up this portfolio. Talk about like the months after that, like just the first couple months after I no longer have this place to go every day that pays me a salary.
Yeah, it was scary. I mean, it still is at times if you go, you know, a little ways between a good deal and, you know, it's just like being an entrepreneur or anything else. If you're sales dependent, which there aren't many, you know, entrepreneurs who aren't to some degree sales dependent. So getting, you know, like even before I was a grown up with a job. Like my dad was an attorney for 40 years. My mom was a teacher. So I was very much programmed to think like, oh, getting a paycheck every 2 weeks or 4 weeks is, that's what my comfort zone was. So it was definitely scary in one sense to make that transition. But at the same time, like I'm working from home and like, you know, I'm always pretty good about catching my kids' games and all that sort of thing. But now I don't have to worry about vacation days and, you know, all those things. So it definitely netted out to excitement, net excitement. There was some scariness in there too, but.
Well, all right. So compound that.
Yeah.
With 3 months after we meet and do the last show, you are faced with COVID. The COVID crisis hits. And now you've given up the salary and you're on your own. Like,
what's COVID?
March of 2020 happens. Let's just say that. And the market happens. How did you navigate through that?
It did. It slowed things down for a little bit, but at least
on what side of things?
Well, on the like on my active, you know, kind of the way my business is, you know, I've got the rental portfolio and all that, but my active business is we're sending out marketing people who are interested in selling, but maybe have never taken the steps to hire a real estate agent and list it. They call in, you kind of talk to them, see what their situation is and look at the property. It involves like going out and looking at the house, a lot of face-to-face meetings. That pretty much slowed down. Like the real estate market as a whole, I'd say is still extremely hot.
What would you say it slowed down? Because what is the average age of a seller to you on that market?
I'm in 60s, 70s.
So was it that they were a little bit cautious of people coming near them because of the coronavirus?
Yes, that. And I think also just, you know, there's so much uncertainty and, you know, misinformation and confusing information about what this thing was and how can you get it and like what, you know, all the, it just kind of caused everybody, even on our side too. We're like, well, let's postpone our appointments or cancel our appointments.
Right. And, okay.
You know, it slowed down, and really to get a deal flow, you have to have that funnel of how many postcards are you sending out? How many calls are you getting off the postcards? How many appointments are you getting? How many contracts are you getting? How many deals are you closing? You know, it's a funnel just like any other sales process. And so you just like throw a big monkey wrench in the funnel at the top and nobody wants to meet with you face to face.
So how did you guys navigate that?
I mean, just maximizing, you know, just cut down on the number of opportunities to buy a good deal. So just buckling down and maximizing. And
do you feel like in that process though, which I'd be interested, and maybe we don't know the answer today because we're still so close to it, but do you feel like that created the opportunity for you to get more creative or more efficient in your systems? I just think, Joey, of our interview we did with Mike Michalowicz, the Profit First author, he talked about when forced with a situation, usually the tightening of stuff, it makes us think more creatively. It helps us sometimes find opportunities that have always existed that we just didn't deal with because we could. Have you seen that started to happen in your business at all?
Yeah, I'd say so. I guess I really, this is kind of a theme for my whole real estate career, even though it's only a few years into it. I found that doing something a little different than like the textbook, like I guess technically you could consider me a wholesaler, but what I've done, and without, you know, revealing who my partners are, because I don't know if they've made it public or whatever, but I'm working with a company that's got a bunch of rental houses themselves, like hundreds. They are a regular cash buyer. They're buying 10 or 12 houses a month, renovating, renting out, holding on to the long term. So they've got, and they've raised money passively from other investors. So they have kind of a fiduciary duty to put this money to work. They have to buy houses. I teamed up with them to help kind of fulfill their demand. And so that's another, basically, you know, without going into the weeds too much on wholesaling, the circumstances have to all line up right. You know, it's got to be usually a vacant house that you can get access to and allow, if you're going to try to flip the deal to another buyer, they're going to want to inspect it. And, you know, sometimes the seller is, you don't want to confuse the seller about, wait, I thought you were buying it. No, no, they're buying it. So it really makes wholesaling, even though it sounds great and it can be profitable, it's kind of a tough, there are a lot of deals that don't work because the circumstances have to line up.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And basically partnering with, these other guys who, I mean, I myself am a buyer, but I don't have unlimited funds yet. I'm working on it. You know, there are only so many houses you can buy, where you're not dependent on someone going to already be lined up to buy it from you for more than you're buying it for.
Right.
But basically we kind of streamlined our systems, I guess, to where we're able to make more deals work, even if it's not going to be a huge profitable deal. Like the ability to match the person who needs to sell their house and the ultimate end buyer is often kind of tricky to do, but by kind of doing things the way that I'm doing, it's a little easier.
Yeah.
So that's a long answer to a short question, but yeah, it's a little bit of a unique model. And we kind of started doing that right around, March.
Yeah.
Are you looking for ways to implement ideas, get exposure to new ones, and be surrounded by people on the same journey as you? Joey, where can they go to do that?
Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/community. You can join for free today.
So let me ask a question. So obviously the last time we met, you had 60 houses and we're kind of going down this road of acquiring more rental properties. You partner up with a group who needs somebody to help them buy locally.
Yep.
You're doing wholesaling on the side with them. You're sort of looking at some properties and they came to you and said what? It seemed like there's been a little bit of a shift lately and things are going on in your life.
Well, they made me an offer to buy all my houses.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, almost all of them. There are a couple that I'm going to hold on to, but, they are expanding their business and they, for 5 or 6 years, they've been buying one or two at a time, you know, renovating it, putting it in service and just repeating. And to get to the scale that they want to get to, they need to buy in chunks more. They also, just through our relationship, they've managed my houses for me. And so they literally have the keys. They know more about them than I do at this point.
Makes it an easy decision for them.
And I've spent, you know, these years of accumulating, there's a lot of deferred. I mean, they cash flowed, but we were recycling a lot of the cash flow, putting it back into renovating the properties. And so these guys are professionals. They've done this over and over. They have a standard that maybe the mom and pop landlord and certainly the first, you know, dozen or so houses we bought, you know, they were old and maintenance issues and that sort of thing. So over the years, I've gotten them up, thanks in part to them for helping me operate them to a more of an institutional
grade level
standard.
Yeah. Nice.
And so they kind of just blend in with their own portfolio and, you know, they're trying to buy chunks of houses. I'm like, well, here's a chunk of house.
So when you say a chunk, how many houses are you selling them?
58.
58 houses. Yeah. Now the person listening is like, well, Tao, I've been following you. I love the story of how you got to the point where you felt confident enough to leave your day job because you had enough money coming in to cover that amount of money. Now you're selling your cash flow. Talk to us a little bit about how are you compensating for that?
Well, first of all, the return on, and you know, look, it was they're getting a good deal on them too. But I've basically like 4x'd my money on those. So,
okay.
You know,
I'm listening.
You talk about, especially because I practice infinite banking. So that's my source of capital. You talk about using capital and putting it back. Well, I'm putting it back and
then shove it back in. Yeah.
So that's a big, I mean, yeah, the cash flow is good, but having a nice, you know, chunk of money coming in.
Yeah.
A major monetary event. say.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. But I've got a couple apartment buildings under contract. So, you know, I don't care too much whether it's houses or apartments. I'm looking for cash flowing real estate.
And right.
So we're basically like, yeah, trading in our greenhouses for a couple of red hotels. And I'm going to be focusing more on multifamily.
So what benefits will that provide you outside of just the obvious, like replacing your cash flow? Will it increase your cash flow or replace it?
It'll probably be about the same overall. I'll probably have, I mean, I don't know what 2021, hopefully we're going to be buying a lot more. So hopefully I'll get back to exceeding my number of rental doors. But the idea, really this was not the primary consideration, but I've got some capital gains from the sale. So we're actually waiting until the first week of January to close on them.
Right.
That's going to help. But the apartment, multifamily, you can really maximize your tax advantages from real estate because you've got, you know, 20 doors under one roof or even four or eight. You can do what's called a cost segregation study and break down the components of the building instead of writing all of it off over a 27 and a half year timeline. You can pull out the components that are that the IRS legally lets you write off over 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. And then you couple that with the current tax code lets you take bonus depreciation on all that in the first year. So basically I'm having a multiple six figure capital gain from the sale. And this one, I just talked to my CPA last week and the 120 unit apartment that we're planning on buying in January, doing the cost segregation study should offset all of those gains in the first year. So not only are we getting the gains, but and I'm not even doing a 1031 exchange. It's just selling, taking the gains, but finding more real estate to offset the gains that we got from the sale.
Well, and that's the part that a lot of people don't understand about real estate investing is that they see businesses and they're always looking for what's the profit. Well, what they really mean is what's the money in your pocket.
Right.
And you're about to have lots of money in your pocket, but as it relates to paper, because of this other transaction that you're making, you're going to, on paper, make the profit go away. But the dollars in your pocket don't go away.
That's right.
That's a beautiful.
They still spend.
They spend very well.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a key ingredient. We actually were talking to a guy, our business coach on the phone earlier today. And he said, you know, when he was in the managing money business, he used to work for Goldman Sachs as an investment banker. They would talk to super high income, super high net worth people. And they would say the money was not an asset
allocation.
It was an asset
location.
Yeah, because the wealthy know how to structure deals. And that's exactly what you're talking about. Understanding how to structure the deals and put the money and run the money through certain structures allows you to keep the dollars in your pocket, but not have to send it out in the form of taxes, which ultimately reduces how much money we have in our pockets. I love that about that. But there's other transaction, as we were talking before we pressed record too, that you substituted or added on some of your cash flow by getting into a whole new area of real estate. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, and I'll even add a little bit more to it. I qualified, my wholesaling business qualified for a PPP loan. I took that money and I bought a trailer park with it. Don't tell the Small Business Administration that I said that. But one of my my partner in kind of the active real estate transactional wholesaling business, if you will, he and I got a call off one of our postcards from a guy with a mobile home park, 59 units. And so he was in a position where he was able to sell it to us on seller financing instead of for cash. So we put a little bit of money down. We're paying him monthly. And so, yeah, now I own a trailer park too, which I didn't really see coming, but just kind of going where the opportunities present themselves.
So, and that is, obviously we've talked about mobile homes on the show before, those parks, but from a cash flow perspective, especially since you're able to own or finance it, I mean, how has that worked out for you?
It's real good. Now we're putting the park needs some improvements. So we are taking, kind of like I did with the rental houses, we're taking the cash flow and putting it in. Like, we're repaving some areas. You got some, there's some power meters that were broken, some water meters that are broken. So we're doing some maintenance and some capital improvements. But once that thing is stabilized, you know, our gross monthly rent should be between 12 and 13 grand a month. And we're paying the guy $4,500 a month. There are some taxes and some insurance and a little bit, but I mean, between my partner and me, we're hoping to conservatively 2,500 or 3,000 each a month. So, I mean, the cash flow is really good.
This reminds me of the cash flow game, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. What just happened there is that when Tao was working as an attorney, he was on that inner circle. Yeah. He was in the rat race part.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he found a way to get enough of those small little houses going to where it got him out on the bigger loop. And when he got out on the bigger loop, then what happened? He fell into an apartment complex deal. And was able to basically take all the small houses, sell them, and keep all the profits. And then he landed on another square that gave him access to $8,000 a month of cash flow once everything's said and done, that comes in a big, huge chunk. If you've never played the game Cash Flow, I want to encourage you to buy that game.
Yeah, great
reminder. And start playing that, because it is truly helping you think from a perspective of how do I continue to 1, 2x, 3x my income. But then when you get on the outer loop, because I love this about this update, Tao, is that you're basically helping us see that this is possible, right? Yeah. When it started in a very small way, buying a couple of rental properties and then accelerated really quickly to 60, but now your real estate IQ is so far ahead, and we're still just 3 or 4 years in.
Yeah. Yeah. I still kind of only sort of know what I'm doing.
Well, for those of us listening to you, we're like, you're our hero from a real estate guru standpoint. And I just love this, because this is just the everyday story, that this is not someone we're not, you know, watching, you know, Grant Cardone on the 10X stage here talk about the deal flows he's doing, or Ed Mylett. This is someone that you would know and hang out with and have a beer with if they were in your town. And Tao, I don't want to take any away from the hard work and the intelligence that you have, because you have done all the stuff that is needed to be successful in real estate. And I just appreciate you, you know, hanging out with Joey and I, and just like, hopefully we're learning through osmosis here.
Yeah. And I'd like to ask, so going forward, what's on the horizon? Like, what's next for you as you've now traded in for these apartments? What do you see kind of coming in the future?
I'm trying to figure out the best way to match over the years that I've been doing this, especially recently. And especially people in my former life have, you know, I met up with a couple of guys I used to work with at the law firm, and they're like, wait, you're doing what now? Well, I've always been interested in real estate, and I've got some money to invest, but I don't really have the time or whatever. I've gotten a lot of that. So I'm trying right now. It's just working up here, but I think, you know, in 2021, finding the right way to offer opportunities to people with money who want to put it into real estate, but don't have the time or experience yet to do it themselves. Whether that's through, you know, pulling together some money and buying apartment buildings, or even, you know, I've learned that this off-market marketing thing, even in a very hot market, you can find deals. In any market, you can find deals if you have the right methods. And I've got some that are working. For example, I've done this on some cheaper houses that I can just afford to do myself. But you find something that is, for whatever reason, it's, you think there's some retail sizzle to it. Like one house I got, bought for $25,000, but it's like right downtown, like just a couple blocks from uptown and what all is going on in downtown Birmingham. I knew that somebody, if I could just put it on the MLS, somebody's going to buy that thing for a lot more. Well, I just bought it immediately. I didn't do anything to it. Didn't even go inside of it again. Called one of my realtor buddies, and he put it on the market for, I think, like $49,900. And sold it in a week for $42,500, $17,500. No, we paid him commission and had some costs come out. but and then there's another one I did similar numbers to, and the light bulb started to go off. Like, man, if I could buy, like, if I had like $1 million worth of capital to use, I could go do this a lot. And you're turning your money much quicker. So the velocity, and if you're talking about annual returns, if you're able to flip it a few times over a year. So I've got like some ideas like that in my head. Probably try to find some way to work with you guys on some of the stuff y'all are doing.
And that's the beauty of
getting
all of these ideas together. And I feel like in 2021, we're launching this Passive Income Mastermind, and there's going to be so many opportunities, and I'm so looking forward to figuring out a way for us to work together on some deals, because the multifamily space combined with the short-term rental space that Joey and I have been working through is definitely an opening for us to get our hands into some deals together. And I just, as you're listening to this interview, and I just want you to be encouraged, like listening to the progression of what Tal's been doing. You may have been following his story from the beginning, and maybe you're on the front edge of your story, and you don't know exactly what's available to you, but some takeaways here. One, partner and be around people who are two or three steps in front of you to keep expanding your mind. Also, always be available and open to when deals come to you that are just too good to not turn away, that you take them. and then also in structuring, make sure you're structuring deals to where you get to keep as much of that cash as possible. And lastly, share this podcast with somebody you know, because they need to be hearing these same sort of stories.
Yeah, this is the journey we're all on. So Tal, I appreciate you just being willing to come back and for a third time, and hopefully we'll have you back for a fourth time soon. So thanks again for being a part of this.
Yep. Thank you all for having me.
All right. Thanks as always for listening into the show. We'll catch you next week.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand, so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.